Welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast, the podcast in which Stephen El Trogi, Barnabas Piper, and Ted Kluck cheerfully rant about all the things that don't matter all that much. And now, buckle up for today's episode.
Hey, welcome back to the Happy Rant Podcast. I'm Ted Kluck. They are Ronnie J. Martin and Barnabas Piper, and this is the program where we talk about three things, and then you talk about how we talk about those three things for the rest of the week on Twitter, just so everybody knows the dynamic of the group. Gentlemen, we have a sponsor back in the studio, Missional Wear, missionalwear.com. Also, calvinistswag.com. And Pipe, we kind of changed the culture last week, did we not, with our program? I mean, you...
We did.
When you're young, you just dream of, you know, when you're in that obnoxious early 20s, smug, like, I'm going to change the world phase. I never hoped or dreamed that I would have this kind of impact. But what happened was we talked about Missional Wear. We said that they should actually be called Calvinist Swag. And then, Pipe, tell us what happened and tell us about the company.
Yeah, so I was corresponding with their owner, who's a great guy, and he said, you know, he appreciated the sponsorship. And then he said, you need to go check out CalvinistSwag.com. And I thought, oh no, somebody already owns this site that we were suggesting. But no, he bought the URL and it now points to missionalwear.com. So you can go to missionalwear.com or CalvinistSwag.com, whichever you prefer. And they both point there. So kids who are looking to be world changers, this is how you do it. You start a highly successful podcast, and then you tell businesses what they should do differently to rebrand, and they listen. It's stunning.
Guys, if you're ever tempted to think that this is a waste of an hour of your week, I give you this anecdote. You know,
it's life changing.
It's huge. Yeah, it's huge.
So you can go to CalvinistSwag.com and get all the Spurgeon t-shirts and Calvin quotes and you know, bearded stuff and pint glasses and coffee mugs and then a whole bunch
bearded
of
stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they probably have like bearded statues and bobbleheads. I don't know about those particular things. If not, there's another thing they could include. And then all sorts of very more artful things for those who are not sort of tongue in cheek. But it is. Of all of the Christian clothing and swag that I've seen, they do some of the best work. It's not cheesy. It's ranging from thoughtful to funny, which is a great range, kind of like this podcast.
I like it. That's good radio, Pipe.
Yeah, that's right. That's a segue.
That's a nice segue. Well, gentlemen, we in wandering to and far last week, we managed to offend a few people too. So I think it's appropriate. Just as a program for me to give my blanket apology to everyone, everywhere, all the time. So that should cover us for a while. But we've got some new stuff to talk about this week, guys. And I want to start with Ronnie's sport. And I say that sort of with air quotes, since Hans Bubby, this is radio, not television. You can't see me doing the air quotes, but. Ronnie wanted to let the entire world know that he is actually a fan of a sport. And Big R, why don't you tell him about what that sport is?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because my wife, affectionately known as Big M, she's actually a very small woman, but we call her Big M, and I think that's why we can call her that.
Now, is that kind of a breathing? Is that going to offend or burn people out? I know there was some controversy about that, too. So I think, you know, for the rest of this program, I'm going to enunciate everything as per, you know, just grammatical standards. So if you could just refer to her as Melissa Martin through the rest of the podcast, that would be.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Well, my wife, Melissa Martin.
There you go.
No, she told me, she said, you know, the thing is, she said, Big R, and my name being Ronnie Martin, she said.
Ronnie J. Martin.
Ronald Joseph Martin. She said,
good,
you know, it's
good.
Interesting that nobody knows how devoted you are to the one particular sport that you're devoted to, which of course is professional motocross. And I used to race as a kid and I followed it since the age of 10. And I, you know, I'll even fly, like I went to Detroit last year to go to the stadium to see the race. And
wow.
So I'm like, I really follow this sport. Like I'm really serious about it, but I never meet anybody that follows it. So it's as if I'm an anti-sports guy when, in fact, I'm not at all.
Well, you are an anti-sports guy. You are a pro-sport guy. You are a one-trick pony.
That's correct, because I don't like team sports. So motocross is a solo sport. I'm kind of a little against team sports. I don't like the idea that one guy can ruin it for everybody. I like to be responsible for my own losses.
You like it that one guy can ruin it for himself?
Right. Absolutely.
But if you crash a motorcycle, aren't you in front of somebody else? Aren't you also ruining it for them? Because then they run into you and also crash.
Well, that could be if they weren't wise enough to stay, you know, keep a good proximity so that they didn't ruin their own chances. Yes, absolutely. So
now, Ronnie, what venue in Detroit did you see this race in last year?
Gosh, I don't know. What was it? It was like kind of the newer stadium in Detroit, you know,
Ford Field.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it was. Yeah.
Sports people know that's where the Lions play.
Yeah, the Lions play. There you go.
The home of one motocross race a year. Also, P.S., the Detroit Lions play there.
There you go.
Yeah.
So there it is. So, you know, all the jokes about Ronnie and sports, I mean, I guess we can still make them.
Still just as applicable. Yeah, that was...
It's hurtful, isn't it, Big R? Or Ronnie, I'm sorry. It's hurtful, isn't it?
It is hurtful. Yeah. It is hurtful that I just, you know, it is hurtful that there is like a physically, you know, demanding sport that I'm a part of, that I have some game into, and I never get any props for that. And I think it's I think I've had enough of that. You know,
wow.
He's getting a little. This is tension. Pain. Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. This is tension. Absolutely.
I appreciate how one Melissa Martin stood up on your behalf and suggested that you bring this to our attention, because she said it's interesting that we note your non-interest in sports. I might take umbrage with that. I'm not sure how interesting this is, but but I appreciate A, that she listens. So thank you, Melissa, for listening, and that she is invested enough in your well-being and your reputation to make sure that we address this and give you the proper due for enjoying motorcycles taking left turns.
You know what, man? We're talking about a Proverbs 31 woman right now, aren't we, fellas? Yeah, I think absolutely. That's what we're talking about.
Now, Barnabas, I'm sure I don't have to bring this to your attention, but here we have another wife of a host kind of influencing the program, you know?
That's
I think for the better in this case. You know.
I mean, it's certainly bringing an element to light that I guess it adds something. I mean, it's neat.
Yeah, it's neat.
You know, I've always liked to describe my wife as neat. So when we're done with this broadcast, I'm going to take that to her.
Every
I'm
girl's dream being described as neat.
Communicate your opinion of her, Barnabas. Barnabas thinks you're neat, Melissa Martin.
Wow, I love it. I love it.
Yeah, neat as in like nifty, not neat as in like neat and tidy.
When you say nifty,
tidy.
it just really accentuates.
It drives it home, doesn't it?
That's really what I was going for. I was trying to really hone in on that.
Now that you said nifty, I feel like the game has changed.
Well,
babe, not neat, nifty.
She's going to love that, Ronnie. She's going to feel
high praise.
She'll feel cared for and affirmed by you if you call her neat.
She'll feel cared for, affirmed, and she'll know that she's never allowed to say one other word in regard to this broadcast ever again.
Absolutely.
She had her moment, and now it's time for her to just sort of nestle back into her complimentarianism.
Guys, this is absolutely. This is like a marriage program. You know, this has turned into like the Gary Chapman hour or something.
It's also very appropriate that she passed on her comment through you as opposed to trying to contact us directly, because that would have been inappropriate on so many levels.
That would have been
completely egalitarian, of course.
Yeah, a breach of complementarian, you know, ethics. Yeah, she just can't have on this program.
She absolutely would have come off like some crazed, you know, frothing feminist had she done that.
Like, when we say crazed frothing feminist, who do we typically think of, fellas, when we say that? I don't know.
I don't think of anyone. I'm drawing a blank.
Okay. I also wouldn't want to insult your neat, nifty wife by associating her with anybody by name. So we should probably avoid doing so.
Speaking of people insulting people, fellas, we got a user request for user. Did I just say user?
Yes, you did.
I was thinking reader, and then I was thinking listener, but for some reason I said user. We got a listener request for us to talk about Donald Trump, and the listener just said Trump: what the heck. So I'll throw that to you guys. Donald Trump, what the heck.
Ronald Joseph, do you have anything to start us off with on Trump, what the heck?
Barnabas, I mean, it's almost as if it's so ridiculous that just saying what the heck almost answers the entire question about Donald Trump, you know? I mean, it just summarizes it so fully and so completely. Do you know what I'm saying?
It does, and I don't know what else we can say, at least that's appropriate for the clean label on iTunes. that guy... I mean, I think that's the other phrase you can use. Just that guy.
That guy.
That guy. What the heck? He's just – the fact that there are people who like him is not surprising to me, and yet it's baffling at the same time. I mean, I've looked at enough YouTube videos to see – you know, you read the comments, and those are Trump voters. That makes sense to me. You know, you read blog comments, and you know, you see the little Twitter profiles with just the egg that harass people. You know, those are people who will vote for Trump. Mm. But goodness sakes, like, who knew that somebody who was so, like, racist and misogynistic could garner such a following and not just be laughed off the stage? It's not a real positive statement about the country that we live in.
Have you guys are you familiar with the movie Wag the Dog? Kind of a political movie. It was made in the 90s. Robert De Niro, Dustin Hoffman, Dennis
Leary. I loved it at the time. I don't remember enough details about it, but I remember really liking it.
I actually loved it at the time, and I watched it again last night, and I still love it. It's a really funny, really clever movie. It's kind of a commentary on, at that time, and even more apropos now, I think just, you know, the rampant entertainment culture in American politics and how the media really shapes things and how just, you know, sort of the people's perception of things kind of can alter reality. And it really just seems like that's where we're going by even sort of including a guy like Donald Trump in the conversation in a serious way, you know?
I think you know, we've talked many episodes ago on this about how like Christian bloggers and reformed people will sell the books of those we hate by all of our outrage about it. So, you know, Rob Bell releases a book and it might sell some copies, except that every conservative Christian just rails on it and raises its profile dramatically. And I feel like this is the mass media version of that. Everybody hates Donald Trump except for the subset of people who are also misogynistic and racist. But because he is on every news network and every radio show and every blog and every news site all the time, his profile has risen. So he now looks like a front runner, and he may actually be a front runner for the Republican nomination because everybody hates him. It's the reverse. So our culture of outrage is coming back to bite itself in the butt.
You know what's so funny about Trump is like there's no guy behind the guy. Like, and I think to kind of walk around it to the other side for like 29 seconds, what everybody I think appreciates about him is that he's not a politician. And I think we're in this age of there is so much disgust and there's so much tiredness about politicians. And then you get a guy that comes up and he becomes this comic book character, and he's actually not being political. And there's not like some deeper layer behind the guy that we're trying to get to. And so like love him or hate him, he's a guy that just speaks his mind, and I think
you need to put mind in air quotes.
What's that?
I said I think you need to put mind in air quotes. He speaks his.
Well, I mean, I think that's
whatever.
Yeah, I think
that
should be understood. But yeah. And we call those air bunnies, by the way. But but I just think, man, there's something about that to where, I mean, I think it's causing people to say, hey. There's a part of him that we wish people we took more seriously could adopt in terms of personality and truth, whether we agree with it or not. Because I've talked to people that literally say, I just like his personality. I don't agree with half of what he says, but I just like that he calls it straight.
I would like to meet somebody who likes his personality. That, I mean, really?
Right.
I think we have to kind of suss out what like means in that scenario. I mean, like
amused by?
I'm amused by it. I'm entertained by it. I'm even at some level refreshed by just his, I guess, brutal honesty or whatever. But yeah, liking his personality, that's a different thing.
I will say this about Trump, and this is not an endorsement of anything. I think he is the worst candidate for president since ever.
Well, we just lost that sponsorship. Great job.
Yeah, sorry, Trump.
Great. The GOP was just getting ready to drop us.
Here's the thing. The more we rip on him, the more likely we are to get his funding. So it works for every other network. No, I every other politician is boring. The last interesting politician was Barack Obama. And and before that, I guess I was kind of pre-politics in my interests at all. But
It was Clinton. He was super entertaining.
Yeah, that's I would have when Clinton was elected, I would have been in high school maybe.
Yeah.
But so not old enough to really care. But he has brought a level of interest to the political realm. Now it's really tired and I'm already bored with it, but for me to have any interest in what somebody standing on a political stage is saying for several months is a brand new experience for me. And so I get the appeal from a pure consumption standpoint.
Yes, absolutely.
Train wrecks are interesting.
Yes.
MMA is interesting. All sorts of very brutal things are interesting. And he is the train wreck of political speak. So you can't look away. It's really fascinating. But it gets disgusting the more and more you watch of it, though.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Hey, speaking of watching Barnabas, and we didn't tease this out before the program in our production meeting.
Ooh, a surprise!
Yeah, Heisman Trophy, man. Do you have a favorite? Given the three guys that are going to New York,
I think it's McCaffrey, Henry, and is it Fournette?
Deshaun Watson.
Oh, Watson. Okay.
Yeah.
I suspect Henry will win it, but I think McCaffrey should.
Yeah.
And I mean, Watson has a legitimate candidacy as well. I think he just doesn't have the hype, and I think hype plays into these things.
Yeah, I think hype is huge, and I would agree with you. I mean, I think if I were drafting a running back, it would be Henry to play at the next level. But as far as a guy—
I would wait a year and draft Fournette, but—
Agreed. But boy, have you watched the McCaffrey kid play at all? He's unbelievable. Yeah. He's so much fun to watch.
And for listeners who are not college football fans, and by listeners I mean Ronald Joseph.
Thanks, fellas. And again, I appreciate you even explaining what the Heisman Trophy is.
I was getting there.
Remember, there's a third guy on the broadcast right now. Pull me in that way.
So the
Ronnie, are you wearing like a bright like Fox Racing shirt?
No, I don't go. I don't go that direction with my love of that particular.
No, this is professional motocross. So they have like Mountain Dew and Red Bull sponsorships. So it's not like it's not Home Depot and
it's
Pepsi.
A Monster Energy sport. B-Pipe. It's a Monster Energy sport.
I'm sure there's competing teams. The Heisman Trophy, Ronnie, goes to the best college football player every year. What that really means is the best quarterback or running back every year, usually quarterback, because defensive players don't count. Defensive players are the people trying to tackle the ball carrier, Ronnie, in case you're wondering.
Okay, so because I'm an artist, best is always subjective. How do we determine who's best?
It's very subjective in this case as well. So this is like the arts comp. This is like the best picture nomination.
Yeah, you know what? This
for
is like
athletes.
The Oscars. I mean, a bunch of people just vote on it.
Okay. Know? It's completely corrupt, then, is what we're saying.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, for sure, which is why I think Henry will win, because he plays for Alabama, who is the highest profile program with tons of success for a coach who's won multiple championships. And so I think that will tip the voters his way. And he did it in the SEC, which is that's the Southeastern Conference, Ronnie, which is considered to be the most competitive. I think McCaffrey is the better player at the college level, or at least had the better season, was the better player this year.
Now, let me ask you this, man. If McCaffrey wins, do you think people are going to say he got it because he's white?
I don't think you can say that after he broke Barry Sanders' all-purpose yards record. I mean, there may be people who say that, but I don't think that will come from any intelligent source. That sounds like something that might come from First Take. But it's not a situation where there's like a better case, a clear better case for a minority candidate in this case. Sure. I mean, he has a legitimate case for it.
Yeah, agreed. Ronnie,
ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Mahaney Sports Broadcast.
Yeah, no, Ronnie, just to close the loop on this discussion, which I'm sure you'll love to do. McCaffrey plays running back, which is a position that hardly any white guys ever play. So I think
it's because it requires being fast and strong.
Right, the last white running back to win the Heisman was like 1972 or something like that.
Joe Namath? Was that him?
No, Namath was a quarterback.
But the right sport. That's really good.
Good sport. Job. And Namath played at Alabama, so that sort of and builds on what Barnabas said.
And writes skin color. So you got 2 out of 3 right on that one.
Oh, man, you guys are so sweet to me. I feel so welcomed and included now.
Ronnie J. Martin Sports Commentary, folks. You can look for his spinoff program, After Hour Sports with Ronnie Martin. All right. One more topic, gentlemen, and just to keep it on the Christmas tip, if you will, somebody again, a listener wrote in and wanted us to bat around the idea of why. Let me see if I get this right. Why Reformed people or why Christians don't like Lent, but they like Advent? Is that right, Barnabas?
Yeah, that was generally the way the question was framed. Just the idea that Advent is like really celebrated.
Yeah.
So you know. If we're just going to go based on Twitter, because that's sort of the litmus test of what matters in the Christian world, when Advent starts, Advent sermon series are starting and people are tweeting about it and pictures of Advent calendars and wreaths and whatever else people use to celebrate those things. And Lent, most people don't even know when Lent starts, for one thing. And most people don't really know what Lent is, and it really doesn't get celebrated the same way as like a countdown to something significant.
Yeah, I think so. Listen, fellas, so I'm part of a church planning network called Sojourn, a super hipster. I think it's the hipster church planning network. Yeah,
that's the tagline, isn't it?
I think it is. I think we've eclipsed A29 with that whole tag, and. So I think what's interesting is that most of the churches in the network celebrate both, but I think. We don't celebrate Lent at our church, but I think with Advent, because nobody is contesting Easter all the time, nobody's ever trying to bring the East back into Easter, around Easter time.
Just
I think what
give
Advent
it some,
does
give it some time. The hipsters will be doing bubble tea at Easter in no time.
Well, nobody doubts that. But for now, I think it's just this idea that Advent allows churches to, keep the Christ in Christmas. And especially if you're Reformed, it brings some of that tradition into it for sure. Does that make sense?
I do. I think the other thing is that I think Lent is associated with Catholicism much
Absolutely.
More. So Advent has always been, and I don't know if it's just because it's a more enjoyable season because it's celebratory, whereas Lent is more like a season of mourning almost, like a season of reflection and mourning. The way it's celebrated is usually by you give something up. For the season, at least that's the tradition. Now, I remember laughing at kids who did that because they're like, I'm going to give up chocolate for Lent. And I'm like, what? Why? I never understood that concept. But it doesn't have a definitive start date. It runs – it's longer. I believe it's 40 days instead of 25. And it's just a whole lot less clear what it's about. And I think the other thing is that
the only thing I can say, go ahead.
I was gonna say I think the other thing is just that Christmas is a way bigger deal in the American church than Easter is. Like Easter, you little girls wear floral dresses and we eat some ham and like, but there's no gift exchange. There's no Easter season. There's an Easter day. You don't even get days off work for Easter. You get if you work for a religious organization, you might get Good Friday off. But in the secular world, nobody even knows what Good Friday is. So it's. I think that's the bigger piece of it is that Easter just doesn't get the same play.
Easter's just not considered really a holiday, whereas Christmas is a holiday. I mean, I know I'm using the H word right now, but I'm just simply saying.
But you're using like lowercase H. It is a holiday. No,
absolutely. I would never dream of saying happy holidays. Capital H's.
Have you guys ever done anything for Lent? Like, have you ever been part of a church where it was normal for people to be like, I'm giving up X for Lent, chocolate.
I actually haven't. I want
TV.
To ask you, Big T, have you ever been a part of a church that celebrated Lent?
No, I haven't, man. Except one year we were in a small group and we had a guy, he was real kind of, he was sort of the de facto leader of the small group and he wanted everyone to give up television for Lent. This was back in the kind of, I don't remember when this was, but this was back when everybody was sort of, very nobly like giving up their televisions or turning their backs on media and feeling sort of miserable but self-satisfied about it. And this was the year for us to do that. So I remember one year everyone in our small group gave up television for Lent, and it was supposed to be this really profound thing, but really I don't know that it did anything for anyone.
Yeah, I think the only thing great about it now is like people on Twitter you know, give up social media for 40 days.
I love
and you're kind
it
of really
people,
glad that they've done that.
Yeah, exactly.
All the people who give up social media for Lent are the people you want to give up social media forever.
Forever.
So,
yeah.
So
yeah.
It's perfect.
Especially why don't you just those people Lent that tweet forever. A lot about like sporting events. You know, I feel like it just gives me a nice break for that particular time.
Wait, wait, Ronald, what did you just say about sporting events?
Nothing. I didn't say anything.
Oh,
I forgot.
That was like a verbal subtweet of me.
Was he being passive aggressive?
No, that was not you. That was at Jared Wilson for sure. That was a subtweet.
Okay. Well, he doesn't tweet during Lent anyway because the Patriots are done playing. That's not football season. So.
Oh, that's true.
At Jared Wilson
let me
throw this to you guys.
At Jared C. Wilson, if you want to tweet at him in real life.
Okay. Oh, I see. At Jared C. Wilson, and because we're enunciating everything perfectly this week, no abbreviating. Do you guys know of any like kind of reformed celebs who have given up social media for Lent?
Not that I noticed. That much mean I didn't miss them very much.
I mean, yeah, I had some friends that did it that I wouldn't consider celebs, but just they, you know, they kind of do the big announcement. Like,
oh,
you know,
big announcement. Hey, like I'm stepping away, you know, it's going to be
stepping away for Lent.
I know. And, I hope you can all survive without me.
I hope you can survive without my pithy observations.
I feel like one of the things that always struck me as funny about Lent. So Ted, you mentioned this is like, you know, people give stuff up and they feel miserable and self-satisfied. It's the announcement of what they're giving up that bothers me. I think it's essentially a fast from something.
Right.
Yes.
But fasting is between you and God. If you're going to give up something for Lent, it's supposed to be something that you see as a hindrance between you and God. So it's a distraction. It is. It's eating away at your soul. It's idolatry. It's something. And then that's between you and God, not you and everybody you hope is proud of you for giving this thing up. And that's always been one of the weirdest things about Lent to me is the public announcement of your own good deeds or your own self-sacrifice. That's just. That seems counter to the whole point of it.
Hey, fellas, good to be back. Good to hear your voices. We had some audio issues there for a few minutes. I think it's a new program that Skype is piloting where they automatically censor out bro talk. So we slipped back into some of our old patterns, and I think Skype just took the liberty of ending the call. So we are back now. We have time for one more topic. This was another good listener-suggested topic, and it's something we've touched on here before, guys, on the program. It's the idea of guilty pleasures. Do they exist? What are they? Do we feel sort of especially compelled to apologize for quote-unquote guilty pleasures? And I guess we need to frame this in some context. Like, I'll be vulnerable. I think, you know, liking. Like crappy hair bands from the 80s would be to some people a guilty pleasure. Now I don't feel especially guilty about that from either a moral or an aesthetic standpoint. So I guess for me it's not a guilty pleasure, but
you're just saying there's example for it is what you're saying.
There's an example for it. There's an example for what we're talking about. So I'll throw that to you guys. We talked about it a little bit before, but let's get some more commentary on that.
Well, Ronnie, you had an interesting comment on this one when we were trying to figure out what topics we should pick. You said something very definitive about guilty pleasures.
Yeah, I said I actually don't even believe in the term.
Mm. I mean, those are strong words.
Those are strong words. And I guess if you look, you know, and again, you know, if you look back at my – and again, I hate to say it this way, but if you look back – on my catalog of musical endeavors, I'm probably the last guy in the world that would be, you know, that could have a guilty pleasure and that could, you know, sort of promote guilty pleasures because I've done a lot of embarrassing things over the years.
Really? And, such so, as?
Well,
yeah,
you know,
do tell.
I think that's another broadcast for sure.
Well, you know what? You're almost going to get vulnerable, Ronnie. You almost opened up.
I know.
Up,
I almost you know? Was, and I thought, you know, we only have so much time here before either the program's over, we start having audio issues again. So
it's a time issue. Skype does this thing where if anyone gets too sensitive, they cut out the call.
Well, that's because we're using Reform Skype, right?
Reform Skype.
Yeah,
we have anti-feelings Reform Skype.
Yeah, so I just think that you know it's weird because I've never, you know, it's like I like what I like. And I never feel the need to apologize for it, even if it crosses some boundaries of which people might make fun of me for. For instance, you know, professional motocross, or my absolute undying love of Christmas and Christmas music, and you know Christmas romance fiction novels. You know, I just throw it out there and I say I like these things, and I don't understand what it's like to apologize for liking something that doesn't sort of tip over into something, you know, immoral. Obviously, you could say Christmas fiction is immoral. Again, that's an opinion thing. So do you
feel like anybody else should feel guilty for what they like? So say, for example, if Ted was to finally confess to his enjoyment of Amish fiction, Amish romance fiction of the Christian genre, should he be embarrassed about that? Or should that just be a thing he enjoys, not a guilty pleasure?
I just absolutely don't care what somebody else's likes are, because mine tend to shift in some really bizarre places that if you know me, you would think, well, is he really into that? So I have some eccentric tastes. So if you have some eccentric tastes, I just think, well, everybody has those. So why are you apologizing for them?
I feel like the idea of guilty pleasures has been elevated because it's, there's like this elitist sense of what people should and shouldn't like, and it's constantly shifting, so nobody hits the mark. And it's easy to throw stones at hipsters, but like the original idea of hipsters was the idea of, oh, I liked that before it was cool, or I liked that before it was famous. And so as soon as something got popular, they quit. They moved on to the next thing. So I remember sitting in a friend's car listening to Coldplay before Coldplay was famous. And he introduced me to them. He just said, hey, here's this band I stumbled across. And I thought, wow, these guys are really good. Here's the thing. I still kind of like Coldplay. I don't love their music. I never loved it, but I thought it was pretty good. But I'm not allowed to like Coldplay anymore because they're just sort of the passe band if I was to abide by that sort of elitist standard. And so I think the guilty pleasure is something that sort of gets foisted on people because there's this,
you're telling me that Coldplay is no longer elitist and hipster enough? I thought that one was safe, man.
Maybe they went away and came back.
Okay.
Like, but so Mumford & Sons would be another example. I really like Mumford & Sons. And when they first came out, if you were amongst like the first 5% of people who loved their music, you know, oh, it's this British band and they do sort of this rock folk thing and there's some banjos and bass and whatever else.
Then you're okay. You're grandfathered into liking them.
But if you liked them by the time they performed at the Grammys, well then it's not a guilty pleasure. It's just sort of like, oh, that's kind of lame. You're so stereotypical, you know, 30-year-old white guy kind of thing.
That attitude is maddening. That makes me want to punch someone. I hate it.
I think it takes real, like, this is not a joke. It takes like real conscientious effort to rise above that and go, wait a minute. I just like the music. Why can't I just pop in my headphones and listen to the music and
But there's
this like cultural pressure of I need to find what's next and new and best. And I gave up on that like about a year ago, maybe. I was just like, I will never discover another new band.
Well, yeah, Piper,
I
think you have to make the distinction. When you're talking about music, unfortunately, fellas, by the time it gets to you, you are not in the 5% anymore. And by the time it gets to the Grammys, you are part of the 105%.
Yeah.
Because there are subgenres of subgenres of subgenres. By the time any of the three of us like actually hear something and we feel like it's 5%, it's already at 85%. So in terms of music, there's no beating that ever. Unless you're like a journalist, unless you live your life like within those circles. And so, I mean, you just have to enjoy what you enjoy. It just doesn't matter.
Barnabas, you're a few years younger than Ronald and myself.
And
you know, I'm sure Ronnie can attest to this, especially now that he lives in the Midwest. But you reach a certain age and it stops mattering to everyone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're the guy in his late 30s and you're still like hipster and elitist about music, everybody just thinks you're a douche.
See, now I live in Nashville, so like this pressure has gone back
that's
up.
True.
So I moved from Chicago, where you have sort of one cultural center, to Nashville, where you have sort of the center of the arts and creativity. And I've genuinely just had to say, you know what? If I want to be invested in anything mentally, I need to quit caring about music. about what's new. And so I listened to music that I liked 5 years ago or that was popular 40 years ago, or I stumble across something new and I like it and I listen to it. But it was like a conscientious decision to go, oh, wait, I don't need anybody's permission to enjoy something.
You don't need any validation. But, I mean, it's music. You just listen to whatever you want.
So here's,
it doesn't even matter if anybody knows what you listen to either. Part of it is like wanting people to know what it is that you listen to, which is bizarre in its own right.
That goes back to the social media, everything is public kind of culture we live in, where God forbid you listen to a song and you don't tell everyone about it, you know?
Or you discover, you know, so I ran across this artist 2 or 3 weeks ago named Leon Brown, who just, he's a young guy, but he sings in sort of this like Otis Redding Motown style. He's super
smooth. And he's
kind
of blowing up right now, isn't
he? Well, and I just tweeted out, I was like, I just ran across this guy and I love him. Why didn't you guys tell me he exists? And everybody was like, oh my gosh, that's so 6 months ago. I'm like, 6 months? U2's been around since 1979. Like, 6 months is not a long time for an artist. That's still new, but apparently it's not new.
It's just for some reason, I mean, there's so much snobbery when it comes to music that just by admitting that you weren't the guy that discovered this guy in his basement, it means that you lack the validity to even enjoy or listen to him. It's a bad – I mean, I've been dealing with this for 25 years in the music industry. It's like even back in the day when I was 18 years old, I didn't even understand it back then. It's such a baffling thing. It's just so backwards to how it is we're supposed to be receiving these things in the first place, which is – just to enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and here's another question about this. Why doesn't it apply to movies? Why is it that it's totally okay to like terrible movies? In fact, there's something, it's kind of the other way. Like you're absolutely expected to enjoy certain kinds of terrible movies, you know, awful sci-fi or, you know,
Die Hard or something like
exactly.
that. Exactly.
Yeah.
Die Hard's an amazing movie.
Transformers movies, you know, where it's just like, oh, that's a Michael Bay flick. It stuff Anchorman. Blows up. So like liking terrible movies is a mark of, it's almost like ironic pride, but liking popular music is a mark of like artistic failure. I don't get it.
And that just silenced everything in there right there.
Yeah, I mean, no one gets it.
I mean, I think that answers the question. Well, this is the thing. I think the music scene just covers a larger base, you know.
Yeah.
So if you hang around, you can find snobby indie filmmaker types that are just going to ridicule anything that comes out into the theaters, and you know anything that you like, you know, that comes out, you know, in that format. You know, they're going to look at you like you were just born yesterday. And so again, you can't win. It's like fighting wars that you literally can never win, instead of just saying, hey, you know what, fellas, I saw Creed 5 days ago and it changed my life.
Just to be clear, the movie, not the music, correct?
Well, that literally should be a given, and I might have to quit the broadcast because you thought the other way around.
But what if you did like the music Creed? Would you feel guilty about that?
I would feel like my life had lost all of its meaning, and I had to back into some.
I feel like maybe you're undermining your own previous argument.
I agree. There's some contradiction there.
Basically, what Ronnie failed to say the first time around is even he has his limits, and Creed
is that limit.
Creed the band is the limit. Creed the movie, however, is right in his sweet spot.
There's a big difference between the two, and I think, you know, we can argue that on another program for sure.
Guys, I'm going to close this program with sharing just a special dream, I think, for us and for our little endeavor here, and that is I would love for somebody to be hipster and elitist and obnoxious about listening to us. You know what I mean? Like if you started at the beginning, then that's cool. But if you sort of jumped on like 6 months in, then it's lame.
It's going to be it's pre-Martin happy rant.
Pre-Martin, post Altrogi happy rant. Like, when did you come on?
Although if you're super hipster, you watched the Google Hangout videos of Stephen Altrogi and Barnabas Piper, which were pre-TED.
So this is third wave.
We're in
third wave right now.
So you know what we need to do is we need to get MissionAware to create some stickers with the happy rant logo and like it says like EP period one. And so this is for the episode oneers, the people who were there from the get-go. And so they get to earn that right and stick that on the back of their minivan. Or their Prius or whatever.
Speaking of MissionAware, Barnabas, why don't you tell folks about the offer.
Yes. So at the beginning, we mentioned Missional Wear and all the cool stuff they offer. Also, CalvinistSwag.com, which just makes me smile every time that I remember that that's the case. But for being a Happy Rant listener, you can get a 15% discount on absolutely anything they sell just by using the code HAPPYRANT at checkout. And with that, you will get a sticker, a die-cut sticker of our logo that you can put on wherever you put stickers. Most people like to decorate their MacBook Pros with them. If you're a Dell user, please don't stick it on there. It makes us look bad. So use the code HAPPYRANT, and you get 15% off at missionalwear.com or calvinistswag.com.
I love it. Men, we have wandered to and fro. It's been great. The grammar and way of saying things has been impeccable, and I've enjoyed it. So until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
Have you ever considered yourself a messenger? Whether it's mics like this, bookshelves around the world, stages to take, or art to make, or perhaps businesses to build, it's time we start testifying truth unashamedly, creatively, and in love. My name is Tamara Andrus, the host of the Messenger Movement podcast, which is designed to catalyze Christians to speak, write, build, and testify. If you're ready to turn your message into a movement and want to run with other messengers doing the thing at scale globally, search and follow the Messenger Movement podcast on your favorite podcast platform today or lifeaudio.com.